All right, welcome everyone to another deep dive here on the show. Today we're going to be looking at a case that really kind of gets at the heart of what asylum law in the U.S. is really all about.
Yeah, definitely a fascinating one to unpack.
It's Stanishkova v. Holder, and it's, well, you know, it makes you think, like, what really is persecution? You know, like, in the legal sense, what separates, like, just really awful stuff from something that rises to that level?
Oh, right. Exactly. Because that's what can grant someone asylum, right?
Yeah.
It has to be more than just having a hard time.
Yeah. And we've got some great stuff to help us break it all down. We've got the Seventh Circuit's opinion on the case, the background on what happened to the people involved, and, you know, some analysis of what it all means.
It's a good one, this case. And it really gets at some of the thornier parts of defining persecution.
So I guess our mission today is really to try and understand what persecution means, like, legally, you know, by looking at this specific case, Stanishkova, and what it all means for asylum law in general.
And it's not just about abstract legal stuff, right? We're talking about real people here.
Right, exactly. So let's introduce them.
Okay, so we've got Georgi Namov and Evaka Stanishkova, a couple from Macedonia, and their story is really, well, it's intense.
It's crucial to understanding how the U.S. defines persecution. I mean, what happened to them? You know, what led them to even have to seek asylum in the first place?
Right. So Macedonia, for those who, you know, remember their history, it was a region that went through some, you know, pretty serious ethnic tension after Yugoslavia broke up.
Oh, yeah. After that whole mess.
And our sources specifically mentioned the conflict back in 2001, you know, the one with the Albanian extremists.
Right, right.
That was like a key part of the backdrop to all this. And then in this climate of just like constant instability, you get this horrific event in July 2002.
Okay, so walk us through it. What actually happened to them?
So July 2002, three masked men break into their home. And they said they were lions.
Lions.
Yeah, lions. And this detail is really important because background info tells us that the lions, they were a paramilitary group.
Okay, so not just random thugs then.
Not at all. Definitely not. And the attack, it was brutal. Georgi Namov, he was beaten. And then Evaka Stanishkova, who was pregnant at the time, she was sexually assaulted.
Oh, God, that's awful. Was there, I mean, did they know why they were targeted?
Yeah, actually, they did. The attackers, they specifically threatened Namov because he had refused to do military service back in 2001.
Refused? Why would he do that?
Well, his refusal, it came from his opposition to how the government was, you know, violently suppressing Albanian rights.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a clear political element to this whole thing.
So it wasn't just like a random home invasion.
Nope. Targeted for sure.
Yeah.
And what happens next is even more telling, you know, in terms of how this whole thing plays out legally.
Yeah, let's hear it.
So they go to the police, right, to report this horrible crime. But the police's response, well, it was basically like, look, there's nothing we can do about these lions.
Wow, really? So the people who are supposed to protect them are basically admitting they're powerless.
Yeah, exactly. And that becomes a major point when we're talking about the legal definition of persecution.
Yeah, I can see that. So, I mean, what could they do?
Well, faced with this terror, you know, and the fact that their own government couldn't or wouldn't protect them, they make a huge decision.
To leave,
yeah.
Yeah.
They flee Macedonia just 2 days after the attack, and eventually they end up in the U.S. seeking asylum.
Which is where it gets legally complicated, right? Because, I mean, they go through this whole asylum process, and their claims are initially denied.
That's right. Both the immigration judge and the Board of Immigration Appeals, the BIA, they both denied their asylum claims.
Yeah.
And the reasoning was essentially that the harm they suffered, even though it was obviously really bad, it didn't meet that legal bar for persecution under U.S. law.
I mean, you hear that and you think, how could an assault like that not be persecution? What was the big question then when the case went up to the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals?
Yeah, it's a good question. So the core legal issue was, did the violence they experienced qualify as past persecution under U.S. law? And, you know, why this is so important is that if they could prove past persecution, it would create this presumption that they have a well-founded fear of future persecution if they had to go back.
Right. That would be huge for their case.
Absolutely. So enter Judge Richard Posner and the Seventh Circuit.
Yeah.
And, you know, for listeners who might not be familiar, Judge Posner, he's a really influential judge.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't mince words.
No, definitely not known for holding back. So what did the Seventh Circuit think about what the BIA had decided?
Well, they were not impressed. The Seventh Circuit, with Judge Posner writing the opinion, they vacated the BIA's decision. Basically, they overturned it.
Wow.
And they remanded the case back to the BIA to look at it again.
Mm.
They just flat out disagreed that what Namoff and Stanichkova went through wasn't persecution.
What were their main reasons for disagreeing? You know, what did they think the BIA got wrong?
Okay, so a big criticism was that the BIA didn't actually have a clear definition of what persecution means.
Mm-hmm.
Judge Posner is basically like, look, if you don't define it clearly, then how can you judge these cases fairly and consistently? And then the Seventh Circuit also really took issue with what they called the BIA's you can imagine worse harm argument.
You can imagine worse harm? What does that even mean?
Well, it's like the BIA seemed to be saying that because worse things could theoretically happen to someone, what Naumoff and Stanichkova experienced, even though it was really bad, wasn't bad enough to be persecution, legally speaking.
Oh, I see. That's like some dark logic right there.
It is. Yeah. And the Seventh Circuit was like, nope, not buying it. They rejected that kind of reasoning as just, well, wrong from a legal perspective.
Yeah.
What's really important for us to understand is that Posner, he was challenging this idea that only like the absolute most extreme physical violence is persecution.
Right. He was broadening it out.
Exactly. He forced them to recognize the psychological impact and also the state's responsibility in all of this. And that was a pretty big shift from some of the previous interpretations of asylum law.
I mean, it makes sense. Trying to define a legal term by saying, oh, well, this other thing is more horrible, that doesn't really seem like a fair or even accurate way to do it. So did Judge Posner and the Seventh Circuit, did they offer up their own definition of what persecution is?
They did. While they didn't, like, lay out a super strict step-by-step test, Judge Posner did describe a kind of framework for thinking about it, based on how serious the harm is and what kind of harm it is. He gave three broad categories. So first, you've got significant physical force, which would include things like beatings and, you know, as in this case, sexual assault.
Right, right.
Then second, there's comparable physical harm, but without that direct physical force. He used the example of, like, deliberate starvation.
Okay, so causing harm in a more indirect way, but still physical harm.
Exactly. And then third, there's non-physical harm, but it has to be equally serious as those first two categories. Mm-hmm. So things like systematic suppression of religion or credible death threats that are, you know, imminent.
Right. So those are all things that really violate someone's safety and their ability to just like live their life. And I remember there's this one quote from Judge Posner in the opinion that just, it really sticks with you.
Oh, yeah. It's a good one.
He wrote that the line between harassment and persecution is the line between the nasty and the barbaric.
Yeah, that's the one.
It's like such a powerful way to put it.
It really cuts through all the, you know, potential for vagueness,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, totally. And it really highlights how extreme persecution has to be.
Yeah.
So even if there isn't like direct physical violence, the court was saying that some threats can be serious enough to be persecution.
Yep, exactly. Judge Posner specifically said that credible threats of death, you know, or really serious physical harm, even if there isn't actual physical contact, he gave the example of someone pointing an unloaded gun at you that can count as persecution.
If it's really believable and immediate.
Right.
And so how did all this, you know, this whole understanding of persecution apply to what actually happened to Georgi and Ivanka?
Well, the court's application was pretty straightforward. They said, look, the violent assault itself, the beating of Mr. Naumoff and the sexual assault of Ms. Stanichkova, that was clearly significant physical force. And then when you add in the specific threats they got, the ones tied to Mr. Naumoff's political beliefs, plus the fact that the police basically said they couldn't protect him from the lions, well, the Seventh Circuit concluded that the BIA was just wrong, like flat out wrong.
Because all of that together did add up to persecution.
Exactly.
And so this ruling, it has some pretty big implications for how we interpret asylum law in the U.S.
It does. Stanichkova, it really expands what we understand as persecution. It makes it clear that it doesn't have to be just about the absolute worst kind of physical violence.
It can include psychological trauma, too.
Right. Especially when you have that trauma on top of physical harm, and then the state doesn't do anything to protect you.
And that point about the state's role or lack of a role, that seems so important, especially with this paramilitary group, the Lions.
Absolutely. The court made it clear that paramilitary groups, if they've got clear ties to the government, well, they can be seen as acting on behalf of the state, at least when it comes to asylum law. And the fact that the Lions were identified as a paramilitary police unit, that was huge for the Seventh Circuit. It suggested that the government was either involved in what they were doing or at least, like, turning a blind eye to it.
Which just emphasizes how vulnerable people are when the people who are supposed to protect them are either the ones hurting them or they're just choosing not to stop it.
Yeah, that's it. Exactly. And once you've established that past persecution happened, which the Seventh Circuit did in this case, you trigger this legal principle called the presumption of future persecution.
Right. You mentioned that earlier.
Basically, it means the burden then shifts to the government. They have to prove that the person no longer has a well-founded fear of persecution if they have to go back to their home country. And the Seventh Circuit said that presumption totally applied to Mr. Naumov and Ms. Tenochkova.
And I think earlier you also mentioned asylum and withholding of removal.
I did.
Could you maybe just remind everyone what the difference between those two things is?
Sure. So they're both legal protections, but there's a difference in like how high the bar is to get them. Withholding of removal, that's a tougher one. You have to prove that there's a clear probability of persecution if you're sent back. But for asylum, the standard is well-founded fear of future persecution. And it's interesting because in Stanichkova, the Seventh Circuit was actually reviewing the denial of their withholding of removal claim.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So when they found past persecution, it's even more significant because it pretty much means they would also meet the well-founded fear standard for asylum, which is easier once the BIA looks at their case again.
Okay. So, you know, for all of you listening out there, what are the big takeaways from this whole deep dive into Stanichkova? What does this case tell us about how we should understand what persecution really means, legally speaking?
All right, so first off, you got to remember, persecution in asylum law isn't just about the most extreme and violent types of harm. It's about how serious the harm is and whether that harm makes someone truly afraid to go back home, you know, afraid for good reason. Second, credible threats of serious harm, especially when they're combined with physical violence or when the state won't protect you, those are big red flags for persecution. And if the government is involved in the harm or even just letting it happen, that makes an asylum claim even stronger.
Right. That makes sense.
And third, this case shows us that psychological harm, it can be just as serious as physical harm when you're trying to figure out if persecution has happened. And finally, Stanichkova v. Holder, it was a major push for the Board of Immigration Appeals to come up with better, clearer standards for deciding asylum cases. It forced them to move away from these vague comparisons to, like, imaginary worst-case scenarios.
So it's not just about, like, a ranking of how bad things are. It's
right.
About real people and their real experiences.
Exactly.
So to sum it all up, our deep dive into Stanichkova v. Holder gives us this really important framework for understanding what persecution really means in U.S. asylum law. It highlights how important it is to consider how severe the harm is, whether the government is involved or not doing anything to help, and the actual experiences of the people seeking asylum.
Exactly. And it leaves us with a pretty big question to think about.
Okay, hit us with it.
How does this legal definition of persecution, you know, the one we see laid out in cases like Stanichkova, how does that connect to our evolving understanding of human rights? And what does it mean for what governments are responsible for in a world where, you know, everything's so connected? These are questions that are still relevant today as we're dealing with people being displaced and looking for somewhere safe to go.
And that's something for you, the listeners, to keep thinking about.